My guest at this time is former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. He is now with the American Enterprise Institute. We've asked him to join us today to offer his thoughts on an alleged thawing of relations between North Korea and South Korea, as well as the United States, and whether he expects anything substantive to come from that. We'll also take a look at a couple other hotspots, including the Middle East. And Mr. Ambassador, it's always good to have you with us.
Glad to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, we saw everybody in love, of course, in the media with Kim Jong-un's sister at the Olympics, and everyone was hoping that that would lead to peace on the Korean Peninsula. Now the South Koreans, at least, are saying that North Korea is willing to suspend nuclear tests and possibly development, I guess, in exchange for direct talks with the United States. And they might even be in the market for denuclearizing altogether. We've obviously seen the North Koreans play the United States like a fiddle over the past couple of decades, especially back in the 1990s. What do you make of what we're hearing from the South Koreans, and how optimistic are you, if at all?
Well, I think the North Koreans have been conducting an absolutely masterful propaganda campaign, beginning with their participation in the Winter Olympics. And by the way, your listeners may not know, but South Korea actually paid for the North to participate. So one more series of subsidies to keep the Kim Jong-un regime in power, unfortunately, actually by our allies in Seoul. You know, they are in North Korea very close to achieving their long-sought objective of deliverable nuclear weapons. CIA Director Mike Pompeo said recently that the North was within a handful of months, his phrase, a handful of months, of being able to land a thermonuclear weapon on any target in the United States they want. So I think the North, having finally figured out that Barack Obama is no longer president, is worried about what Donald Trump might do. And so their response is to throw up a lot of smoke and dust in the air and hope to divert our attention, first with the Olympics and now with this supposed offer to sit down. Look, we've talked to North Korea on and off, directly and indirectly, for 25 years. They've made commitments four separate times in international agreements to give up their nuclear weapons program. Four times they've lied about it. And you just have to ask, does history ever mean anything? If you've negotiated with somebody for 25 years and failed to get agreement, what possible reason is there to think they'd agree in year 26? The only thing they're trying to do, as I say, is get us to abandon the pressure that we're putting on them and hopefully to forswear the possible use of military force, which nobody wants, but nobody wants North Korea with nuclear weapons either. That's what this is about.
What's the smart posture here? You say with the distraction, I guess, perhaps it would be one way to describe it, of the Olympics and now this offer to talk. Where should the focus of the Trump administration be?
Well, I think there's only really one diplomatic play left here, and that's trying to convince China either to do what they uniquely have the capability of doing, overthrowing the regime in North Korea and putting in something that's at least vaguely more reasonable, or working with us, in effect, for the reunification of the Korean Peninsula. Absent that, or some dramatic change in what North Korea is up to, it's pretty unattractive, I think, for President Trump. The due bills of 25 years of failed policy are coming due on his watch. And, you know, the one possibility, which the former National Security Advisor to Barack Obama has said, Susan Rice, let's just accept North Korea with nuclear weapons. But I think the other thing we have to look at is the potential to use military force against the regime's program to make sure that they don't endanger us and our friends and allies in South Korea and Japan. Neither of these options is very attractive, but that's where we are after 25 years of failure.
Quick follow-up on South Korea. You mentioned the fact that they paid for the North Koreans to participate. How much does it complicate our strategy here to have a South Korean president, Moon Jae-in, who is bending over backwards in an effort to make nice with the North Koreans?
Well, it's a problem. I mean, we have to face reality here, just as it was when his predecessors in office, who favored the same kind of policy, the sunshine policy as it's known, provided subsidies to North Korea. Look, there's a compassionate humanitarian argument here. Many South Koreans have families in the North. But the fact is the North is a 25 million person prison camp, and it's not going to treat its people humanely. It's going to take the subsidies and use them for its own purposes. That's one reason this strange, in fact, bizarre regime is so dangerous, that even people like the South Koreans, who are a very divided nation, many are prepared to take very strong steps against North Korea, but their neighbors next door are willing to do exactly the opposite. So because of the inconsistencies in policy over the years, the North has survived and its regime has prospered. The people haven't prospered, but the regime has been able to stay in power and get these terribly destructive weapons, and close to being able to drop them on the United States.
We're talking with former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. And, sir, it hasn't gotten a lot of attention given the media's focus on other things, more close to home, I guess, with the Trump administration. But we keep hearing some rumblings that we're headed towards conflict pretty soon involving Israel and the different factions sponsored by Iran, probably emanating out of Lebanon with Hezbollah and so forth. Just how serious is this getting, and what are we expecting here?
Well, you know, the destruction of the ISIS territorial caliphate, which was the right thing to do, no question about it, unfortunately has led, in part because of the strategy we followed begun by Barack Obama, but it's led to a significant increase in Iran's threatening posture in the region. They're now right on Israel's border. Your listeners may have heard or read just a few weeks ago of Iran sending a drone into Israeli airspace, resulting in an Israeli retaliatory attack into Syria. Iran's building new military bases in Syria. And in general, I think the environment is getting more and more threatening for Israel. So not surprising that they're concerned about it and have taken these kinds of steps. I think it's less a question of the regime in Syria that's causing this trouble. It's much more clearly the Iranian regime, which is the principal threat to peace and security all across the Middle East. So this is, I'm sure, something that Prime Minister Netanyahu discussed with President Trump on his visit a few days ago, and it's going to be something we're going to have to address. This drone flying into Israeli airspace may have been a small provocation, but it's only the tip of the iceberg, I think.
I mentioned how domestic issues have certainly dominated American media. The situation is somewhat similar in Israel. A lot of investigation going on with the prime minister and his officials. How much does that complicate what Israel's response might be if hostilities do break out?
Well, you know, I think Prime Minister Netanyahu thinks this is all political. It's really amazing the extent to which politics is being criminalized in Israel, the United States, Western Europe. He's insisted he's going to resist and is innocent of all the charges. But look, the fact is there are only 24 hours in a day. It's a political has political consequences for him. Bibi Netanyahu is a very strong friend of the United States, and he's prepared to take whatever measures are necessary to defend Israel. So I'm sure he's going to do the best job he can. I'm also sure he'd love to get these allegations resolved and get them behind him.
Last topic, sir. One other thing we've seen is that the effort to completely wipe out ISIS has been sidetracked a little bit because the Turkish forces have decided to go after the Kurds, and the Kurds have felt obligated to respond to that in the western and northern part of Syria. What do you make of what Turkey's doing? How does that impact our fight and all sorts of things?
Well, this is a very good illustration of just how complicated this conflict is, because although Kurdish forces were on our side, we supplied them, armed them, assisted, advised them in the conflict against ISIS, there are many Kurdish elements in Turkey, Marxists, who are strongly opposed to being in Turkey at all. So even though Turkey was a strong opponent of the Assad regime, as were many of these Kurdish fighters, they have their own dispute that is exactly what you see playing out here. And I think, unfortunately, given the long history to this dispute between Turkey and its Kurdish citizens, this isn't one that's likely to go away or be resolved quickly. It's, as I say, an indication of the complexity and deep historical roots of all of these different conflicts, which are all in play right now in Syria and Iraq.
Is this something that's small enough that it's gonna play out in the backdrop of larger Middle East priorities for us, or is this something that could end up coming front and center?
Well, you know, I think we're going to have to address at some point the strategic issue. Now that the ISIS territorial caliphate, in effect, has been destroyed, what comes next? Many of the Sunni Arabs in eastern Syria, western Iraq, being approximate where the geographical area of the caliphate was, don't want to go back under the rule of Assad in Syria or the government in Baghdad, largely dominated by Shia, and in fact, in many respects, unfortunately, a satellite of the mullahs in Tehran. So there's a bit of a vacuum there. Actually, Iran itself is trying to fill it to our disadvantage, and it's a conflict, I think, that's going to consume a lot more American time and attention and resources going forward.
It's almost like the Middle East is very complex. Ambassador?
It is complex.
Thanks very much for your time, as always.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be with you.
Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, now with the American Enterprise Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.